Bangab, he's Jules. Blue skies over West London, sort of. Definitely not blue skies over Paris. We'll be getting to that.
I don't know why I'm smiling, really, because I'm not
happy. There's nothing to laugh about. And the Donnarumma family has even less to laugh about. We'll be talking about that, but it's Champions League, Jules. Incredible game at the Bernabeu between Real Madrid and Manchester City. That 3-3.
Everywhere.
That was at the Emirates.
Yeah.
That was eventful as well.
Yeah.
How about Borussia Dortmund being Borussia Dortmund and Atleti not being Atleti at home?
Exactly.
So tons to get into.
Yeah.
Plus some Cristiano Ronaldo stuff and some Lionel Messi stuff.
Yeah.
Nothing more we could ask for. But
that's true.
We have to start at the Parc des Princes. Paris Saint-Germain against Barcelona. Now, when I had predicted before that I thought Paris Saint-Germain had a 70% chance of going.
Yeah, you went high.
Yeah. I had not calculated.
Yeah.
The fact that Gigi Donnarumma would essentially be responsible for, I think, all three goals.
Yeah.
And that Kylian Mbappe would appear for maybe like 30 seconds.
Yeah.
Maybe he was thinking, oh, I've got so many chances against Barcelona next year, so I don't need to show up.
Yeah.
And that Luis Enrique would decide, oh, why don't I play Marco Asensio as falso nueve? That'll really confuse and throw Xavi.
Yeah. The Pep Guardiola syndrome, in a way, from Luis Enrique, overthinking things. It worked against Real Sociedad, but, you know, let's be honest. Barcelona is a better team, certainly right now, than Real Sociedad ever were this season. And I didn't understand the lineup when I got it an hour and a half before kickoff, trying to work it out, really. I thought maybe a
when you see the lineup and you just see the names, I thought, all right, he's going to play Mbappe through the middle and have Asensio coming in from wide.
Yeah, I thought Asensio would play wide. The only thing is, even with that, Asensio hasn't played much lately. He was injured. He came back. Played at the weekend in that terrible game against Clermont with the C team. He should have never started this game. Whatever the position on the pitch, even a right back with no Hakimi, he should just not have been on the pitch. And the 45 minutes that Asensio put up in this system as well were just dreadful. And it was not too bad in that first half from a PSG point of view. But it was just too easy for Xavi and Barcelona to find a plan to counter the bad tactical plan that Luis Enrique had from the beginning of the game for the first half.
Now, if you wanted to insist on seeing this Paris Saint-Germain glass as half full, you could say, all right, we played a stupid lineup.
Yeah.
We really gifted them all three goals because on the first one, whatever, he should have held it, right? If he holds it, then it doesn't happen.
Yeah.
On the Pedri pass, I'm watching on television, some people are talking, oh, what a wonderful pass.
Oh, great pass.
Even comparing it to, oh, it's something, it's like Pat Mahomes. I'm like, no, Pat Mahomes kind of tends to throw different types of passes. But also, very accurate pass.
Yeah.
But the distance of Donnarumma to where the ball comes and to and Rafinha to where the ball comes, and Rafinha still had a tremendous finish, I thought, there. I mean, dude. Come off your line. The ball is traveling at 2 miles an hour.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. You got all the time in the world to get there. You're bigger than him.
Yeah.
And he just froze.
Yeah.
And then the third one, maybe because he was, I don't know, he was still thinking about the second one. Again, I expect the goalkeeper.
Yeah, but in the first half, they had two corners. Clearly, they identified the fragility from PSG. It's not the first time this season that we've seen them vulnerable on set pieces, especially those corners, especially the corners in swinger like that in the six-yard box with Donnarumma not coming out at all. In the first half, Lewandowski almost scored. He was clear of the line by Mendes. And in the second half, Christensen scored. And yes, Zaire Emery could have defended better. He was man-marking Christensen. But Beraldo had a shocker against Lewandowski, certainly in the first half.
We saw that Beraldo, I think, and I hate to go after young players and bring up an experience, but against Lewandowski, who was not super sharp, I mean, the weird header as well.
Yeah.
We saw Beraldo, I think, just, I don't know if he froze on the night.
He was sinking. But then Marquinhos didn't know until on the morning of the game that he was going to play right back to replace Hakimi. And as soon as Marquinhos and Lucas Hernandez switched, and Lucas Hernandez came a right back, and Marquinhos a centre back with Beraldo, the way they defended on Lewandowski was much better. So that's another part of the tactical plan from Luis Enrique that failed.
Hey, much as I love pointing out Paris Saint-Germain's mistakes, we have to give a credit to Barcelona.
Massively.
I don't think they were outstanding. I think we still saw all the limits. However, they punished every mistake.
Yep.
They were there. They didn't give up. I thought the position, I thought it was actually showed a lot of flexibility. Gundogan, I don't even know what position he was playing because he kept popping up everywhere.
He was really, really
started second striker, then he would pop up deep, then he would pop up wide, and everybody seemed to adjust based on where Gundogan was going.
Yeah, I didn't think about that so much because he played quite high. It's just they played long on Lewandowski. That worked. They beat the PSG press like that. It worked, and well done to them because then when they had to be clinical, they were with Rafinha.
All right, Jose, let's get this out of the way. You were there. I don't know if Donnarumma said it. One of the situations where you're such a bad guy, as bad as Donnarumma was, I'm sure.
Yeah, Beraldo the same. Said, yeah, right? Yeah, you're right.
Yeah, the difference is between the two is Beraldo's younger, less experienced, probably one-tenth as much as what Donnarumma makes. But let's talk about the other guy here who went missing. Now, we know with Kylian Mbappe, you only need 1 second for him to influence a game, right? We know that sometimes he just doesn't, you don't see him and then he appears. But this strikes me as the kind of game where you need to step up more.
Mm.
Especially when you look around, you see that at halftime, Lucho's obviously made a mistake. Then he's changed it around by bringing on Speedy. I thought there was very little there.
Yeah.
And some of it is down to the way Barcelona defended, but a lot of it is down for him. I mean, I expected to see more instances where maybe he came deep to get the ball.
Well, he never does that. He's not very comfortable doing that. No, I think he was in the last third.
Maybe he should. Rather than just sitting there and waiting for a transition.
But then what would happen? I think he just had to be closer to the box in the first half, which he wasn't. And I think credit to Barcelona, like you said, Koundé and Araujo defended really well on him. They doubled up on him. Like Kubasi and Cancelo doubled up on Dembélé in the first half on the other side. It felt disconnected from the rest of the team for most of the game, really. Even in the second half, even when PSG were on top, it just never really felt in the game. I mean, the numbers are terrible for him. It's no shots on target. He had 3 shots, none on target. Only 1 successful dribble out of 5. Only 3 duels won out of 12. He lost the ball 13 times. I think only Dembélé and maybe Barcola or somebody like that lost more than him. But he was just not involved. And I think that one of the keys, again, I know it's obvious, but for the second leg, they need to find, Luis Enrique and PSG need to find a way of getting him more involved. So do you play him centrally? Maybe. Do you play him wide, but just feed him more? Because there was a time in the second half, especially, where he didn't really have the service that he needed. And when he had it, he kept making the wrong decision. The extra touch or 2 extra touches, just the wrong ball every single time. And it was very unlike him because he's usually good, let's be honest. He's carried this team in the Champions League so far this season. And yet, it was just not his night. He was not there.
You know my love for Lucho, but if I'm Nasser, I look at this and I say, all right, hang on a minute. We spent 80 million on this Colomwani fella.
Yeah, who, even Gonzalo Ramos. Why is he coming on after 90 minutes? Why not earlier?
Gonzalo Ramos, who started at the weekend and went on, late changes. But what I'm wondering is if you spend, I mean, between the two of them, right, they've committed 150 million.
Yeah.
And those two guys, on a night when it's not working for you, don't get a look at. Now, I know, Lucho, you like to do things differently, but you have to get it right. And you've had so much time to prepare. Because let's face it, it's obvious from Paris Saint-Germain's performances in the league that if they'd really wanted to push, right, if they wanted to win the league by the end of March, they could have. All those stupid draws that they had and whatever, and the fact that, you know, the teams behind them, whether it's Brest or Monaco, none of these people are really pushing them, right? So I imagine you've been using Ligue 1 for the last couple months to prepare for this specific game.
Yeah,
right?
In a way. Yeah.
And this is the identity that you put out?
He just got it wrong. I think he was quite honest after the game when he said, like, listen, I picked the players because I thought this would work. It didn't work.
Oh, yeah. Thank you, Captain Obvious. No, I thought you were going to pick the players because you thought you were planning on losing.
No. But in the sense that, you know, he tried something. It worked with Dembélé as a false nine against Real Sociedad, for example.
Right. So maybe play Dembélé as a false nine again if you think.
Yeah, but on Wednesday night, just try something different. It was wrong and it was a mistake. And I'm getting a bit frustrated now with all those experiments. You know, like it feels like a like my friend on French radio was saying, like, it's like a Kinder Surprise. You know, you just open the chocolate egg, and then inside is this, and you don't really know what's coming inside. You don't know what the tactics is going to be. You don't know what the system is going to be. You don't know who the players are going to play and who's going to be there. And yeah, it will be easier next week because Hakimi will be back, because Zaïre Emery, who is not fully fit to start, I think, and did well when he came on, apart from the Christensen goal, is going to start in that game. But yeah, you're right. This is not good enough from a Luis Enrique point of view, and certainly not good enough from Mbappe's point of view either.
I look at this and I look at where Barcelona were going into this, not just obviously the absentees. It was so nice for me to see Pedri play again.
Yeah.
But Pedri's not in 90. Maybe he'll be able to start the return leg. Maybe. I don't
yeah,
know.
Yeah, I think.
He obviously had an impact when he played. But let's not forget, this is without Gavi, who you might even argue could be their best player or close to it. There's been no Balde all season. Yeah. And again, right? What about all those João Cancelo haters? He can't defend, blah, blah, blah. This is another thing which gets me, right? Target him. Right, if you really think that. But Cancelo did a good job, as you mentioned.
In the first half.
Cubarsí came across.
Yeah, in the first half.
In the second one, they lost Barcola.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? But it's also because he's speedy Barcola, which I felt Dembele was coming inside more. Which is fine. You can go both ways. But I thought this is a big statement from Barcelona.
It's a good win. It's a really good
win. I think it's still very much open.
Yeah.
I talked about Rafinha at the weekend. I'm happy for him because he feels kind of like the forgotten guy.
Yeah.
In the sense that, you know, people get excited about João Félix because he scores in the Clásico. People get excited about, you know, Lamine Yamal, rightly so, because he's 16. And it's almost like he's been moved left, right, left, all over the pitch. For me, I think I might have said this on Monday or maybe the week before. For me, it's very open and shut, Jules. If you have to square the books, you don't even think about keeping João Félix. You prioritize Rafinha. He may be a saleable asset.
Yeah.
But I think at this stage, if it comes down to Rafinha, João Félix, if it comes down to that choice, for me, it's no choice at all.
Yeah.
You know, and not as a starter. If you want to go Yamal and Gavi next season, great. Pretty darn good, right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But you have to, I think this guy deserves a solid run, because you can say he's inconsistent, but it's not like João Félix is the paragon of consistency.
No, yeah. And certainly if he found some form in the second half of the season where maybe his position was questioned and he felt under pressure, he had to move to the left-hand side, where the right-hand side had always been his favourite side, really, when he was at Rennes, when he was in Portugal, when he went to Leeds. And now, because of Lamine Yamal's explosion, he had to move to the left-hand side. And he did really well yesterday. He came inside a lot. PSG didn't know what to do with him in that first half. And even before his goal, he was dangerous. He had the shot that Donnarumma saved. He created a lot of trouble. He made a lot of trouble for PSG. And it's good. He's still only 27. And yet they paid a lot of money for him. 60 million euros is a lot of money for somebody really who had very limited experience in one of the Big Five leagues, because only one season at Rennes, only one season at Leeds, this is it. But now, yeah, it seems that something clicked for him this season. It's great. To be fair, but we've been saying it, Gabby, the team is playing better since Xavi announced that he was leaving. There's more cohesion. I could see yesterday clearly the team spirit, all of that. And I don't know how far that can take them. Well, they can't win the league, but they will finish second. And in the Champions League, I don't know if that's enough to then be okay next week and qualify for the semi-final, and then whoever they face, I don't know. But the team spirit did a lot of the job last night in Paris.
That's a word about the whole pregame piece, because it wasn't quite WWE, but it felt that between Lucho and Xavi, at least the way the things were reported,
yeah,
some question about Barca.
Yeah, I mean,
who the bigger Kool-Aid is?
Yeah, before the Real Sociedad game, I saw it. I mean, it was a Luis Enrique one-man show. He loves the attention all the time. But the fact that he was against the Spanish club, even more. And I felt that you saw that character again on Tuesday in the press conference. And the question, I think he got the question wrong, or he just didn't want to get it right. Because I think the question was, between you and Xavi, who is more Barca DNA kind of thing? And I think, so his answer was like, straight away, definitely me. Look at everything I won. you know, for Barcelona, look at my points tally, look at this, look at my average point, everything, the treble, blah, 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 blah. So I think that maybe he thought, I'm going to compare me as a Barca manager and Xavi as a Barca manager. Because really then, if you think about the whole career, players, managers, Xavi is a far more, Xavi is a La Masia product, Luis Enrique isn't. So there's a lot of things that Xavi is definitely...
Luis Enrique not a La Masia product. Luis Enrique played for years at Real Madrid,
of
all places.
Yeah.
So it just seems like a totally unnecessary...
It was weird.
...stupid thing to say to give bulletin board material. Xavi joined Barcelona when he was 8 years old.
Yeah, but if you compare manager to manager, then yeah, of course, Luis Enrique with a treble, with everything you want, has been a better Barca manager than Xavi has been for the 2 years that he's been in charge. Right?
Yeah, he also didn't take over. He also, Luis Enrique was also there when there was a guy named Lionel Messi who was pretty good at playing football.
And
Xavi also took over a club that was flirting with insolvency.
Yeah, yeah, and had the Dutch guy before.
So, these are silly. I could have given him a pass if he wanted to talk, who's more Barca DNA, tactically, in terms of approach, in terms of style of play, like who is more, the grandson of Johan Cruyff that they all keep going on about. Yeah. He might have had a point, and I disagree a little bit with you. I think if this is what he was, if this is what you want to say, he says stylistically, he says, I think the way I try to play is more in line with that than Xavi. We can debate whether it's right or wrong. That would have been fine.
Yeah, yeah, I see what you
mean. But to go off and to talk about the stuff that he's won and blah, 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 dude, okay, fine. You know,
and then so when you sit down the Tuesday, you better make sure that Wednesday you're better than the guy that you just dissed, because that's what he did. And tactically, Xavi, even with his substitution when they were 2-1 down, he never panicked. Pedri had an impact. You know, whether we like the pass or not, Christensen had an impact.
We like the pass. But
whether you think the pass is genius or not, switching Rafinha from left wing to right wing, all of that worked. And to be fair, you have to say that on Wednesday night, Xavi won the tactical battle.
All right. You still feeling percentages here? It's halftime.
Yeah.
And they're 3-2 up.
Yeah.
That's how we need to think about this.
Can PSG win 2-1 at Montjuic? 100%.
Right, but with the away goals, Jules. No, just kidding.
So
they win 2-1 and then you go to penalties.
You go to extra time. Can they win 2-0? I think there were some good things from this PSG team overall. By patches, especially in the second half. I think if Luis Enrique gets it right, this time Barca, you know who's going to play. Okay, even if Pedri can start, and I'm not sure a game of their intensity, but I think PSG will have to find it right. They will need Mbappe. So Barca, because they are Mondrick, slightly favorite. Last night on the ESPN FC show, I said 55-45 Barca. I think Jan Agafjotov said 60-40. And then Luis Garcia, former Barcelona player, went like 70-30 Barca now.
Why are they so silly like that?
I don't know. I think it's still great. It's nicely poised.
It's very nicely poised. And again, I think it is also as relevant that as well as Barcelona played, those were three gifted goals courtesy of my boy Gijo. So I think we need to consider that as well. I agree with you. 55-45 Barca sounds about right to me. All right, enough Paris Saint-Germain. How about some quick hits instead?
Let's go, God.
Real Madrid and Manchester City battled to a 3-3 draw at the Bernabeu. Jules, this was some game.
Wow. Well, one of the games of the season, without a doubt. Gary, some of the goals, the quality. I mean, they can try it again. Valverde, Foden, Vardiol especially, more than the other two.
Vardiol more than Foden?
Foden, you've seen that one before on his left. I think Valverde can hit a volley like that.
But I also he has no idea where the ball's going to go, whereas Foden seems like, it's almost like he's got a remote control.
Yeah, that's what I mean. That's why for Vardiol, he can try again. He will never score the same one. Foden, we will see more like that. Valverde as well. Vardiol, incredible. When you look at the XG, 0.7 for both, shows you to finish it 3-3 with 6 goals.
Those are quality finishes.
Yeah, amazing finishes. And that it really was what we kind of expected, to be fair, because Real Madrid played in transition, on the counter. To have Vinicius and Rodrigo both on the same side was really good from Carlo.
We're going to get to that, Charles.
Tactically, of course. And then the way Pep responded, that second half performance from City, I thought was pretty impressive as well.
I mean, I thought there was a long spell in the middle of the game where, in fact, I think it was a long spell where City didn't have a single shot, where it looked to me like Real Madrid were able to defend so well
yeah.
that they have completely neutralized City.
But you can't keep it up for...
You can't keep it up. Also because ultimately, and I think this is a difference, you know, speaking more broadly about these four games, we saw a lot of mistakes.
Yeah.
But we also saw so much individual quality. And you can't always legislate against it because it's not necessarily a defensive mistake. Sometimes you just get beaten by the individual. And that's what City were I think, able to do very effectively to take charge of this and then that final goal.
Yeah. And Gab, we just mentioned it. Carlo Ancelotti put something different out of his hat by moving Rodrigo to the left and deploying Vinicius through the middle.
Yeah, or middle, but of course, because Vinicius always goes left because that's
middle
his tendency.
Middle left.
You create a mismatch. And look, who says that formations have to be symmetrical, right?
Yeah.
I mean, I thought that worked extremely well, especially with no Kyle Walker there. And some people said, ooh, look, you know, Rodrigo's auditioning for, you know, you put Mbappe there for Rodrigo, and Mbappe and Vinicius can both play together on the left. I don't know. Let's cross that bridge when we get to
it. Work all the time.
You have those options also if you have people with the tactical intelligence of Valverde and Jude Bellingham.
Mm.
That's what allows you to do it. But yeah, sometimes Carlo Ancelotti likes to throw curveballs.
Nah, he's good. He's really good.
Jules, we talk endlessly about how important Rodri is to City, but now he has said he needs a rest. This kind of comes at the worst possible time.
Yeah, and I thought the game on Tuesday night at the Bernabeu was one of his, not worst, because he was not.
No, he had his worst one. Was it last weekend or the weekend before?
But you could, I think you can tell, because he loses some balls that he doesn't lose usually, a mispass that he's never mispassed for a player of his caliber and the form that he's been in. And yeah, maybe when you play already more than 4,000 minutes for club and country this season, that's a lot of minutes, that's a lot of football, that maybe starts to be heavy for him. And the thing is, really, when you had Fernandinho before, you had towards, you know, Rodri arrived to be the successor and the heir to Fernandinho. But then Fernandinho was still there to be a good backup at some point, even at his old age. Now, really, there's no backup. Yeah, you can play Rico Lewis, you can play Kovacic, you can play Mateus Nunez, maybe. But there's not another Rodri in that position to be able to rest him.
No, there's no, well, first of all, there's no other
Rodri. No, but
Rodri.
Just another profile.
There's no Rodri in the world. No, I think you can do it. You can play those guys if Stones is fit, stepping into midfield. If he's not, then it does tend to screw things up. What I find extraordinary is he played a ton of minutes last year, too. And they have all these sports science guys. It shouldn't come to the point where Rodri comes out and says this
himself,
publicly.
You mean,
it should be before saying, guys, he's in the red zone. Let's sit him in some of these other games. Let's see what we need to do to work with him. It's interesting. I have this list from the Times. The guy who's played the most, he's actually 10th in Europe for club and country. The guy who's played the most by far, like more than 100 minutes in the number two guy, is actually Bruno Fernandes, which is pretty remarkable. I think he's actually the only attacking midfielder on the list.
Yeah.
So it just tells you a lot about Bruno.
Yeah.
I also imagine he's probably walking around for a lot of those minutes, but still.
Missed it.
Pretty remarkable.
Late Davide Fratesi goal gives Inter a 2-1 win away at Udinese on Monday night. Gab, they're going to win Serie A. We know that, but possibly as early as the derby with Milan on April 22nd.
Yeah, we know that too. Fratesi, 5 goals in Serie A this season, despite starting just 3 games.
He's just one he would ever score, though.
He's the super sub, yeah. By the way, if you get a chance, go online. Check out the first goal.
The
Udinese goal, where everybody just kind of...
Dumfries and Zoma just like, hey, you, me, no, oh.
Everybody frozen. It's the kind of thing you laugh about when you win the game and are going to win the league. Arsenal and Bayern battled to a 2-2 draw at the Emirates on Tuesday night, which leaves a tie wide open. Yeah. But Mikel Arteta has to be very grumpy about some of those stupid defensive mistakes.
Completely, especially the first goal that they gave away. Raya coming out, he scored like that. Gabriel with a terrible pass towards Kvyat. Then it's really well played from a Bayern point of view, Sané to Goretzka to Gnabry. But still, very, very avoidable. Even the second, the penalty for Leroy Sané to run
across the area like that,
half of the pitch, like, you know. But it shows.
I blame Gabriel there more than Saliba.
But it shows some are still learning. They're still young team for some of them. No,
we
Jorginho.
Haven't seen this immaturity. This is
not Luton and Sheffield United and Nottingham. This is Bayern Munich and a Bayern team that hasn't been great in the Bundesliga, but it's still That's what you see on those nights. You see those teams that are great. We talked about Barca, some people dissing Bayern. All of that, they're still so good.
And
so
at the end, Bayern hit the post.
Yeah, come on. Yeah. Yeah, for sure. And, you know, there was other controversy with the referee, Gab, which is the next quickest. If we stick with that game, Thomas Tuchel was furious at referee Glenn Nyberg for not awarding a penalty for Bayern after Gabriel handled the ball on like a goal kick. It was so weird. Was Tuchel right?
No, Tuchel's completely wrong. I mean,
I
wrote a column about this. He was wrong to say what he did because there's the spirit of the law and then there's the letter of the law. And if you want to be some persnickety stickler when it's in your favor and say, nine, look, nobody touched the ball, right? Again, I'm assuming everybody's seen this, but Arsenal, it's a goal kick to Arsenal. Raya touched it. The whistle goes. Raya touches it towards Gabriel, who either doesn't hear the whistle or is just being stupid.
Yeah.
He picks the ball up and he gives it back to Raya. And then he was so angry because the referee apparently said, well, this is a kid's mistake. Yeah. Like, I can't give a penalty. There's certain basic tenets, I think, about laws and rules in football matches, right? They're there to stop the players from getting injured and to make sure that nobody gets an unfair advantage.
Yeah.
And when you get punishments for those laws, they tend to be proportional, right? A shirt tug does not give you an automatic red card, right? Not going back 10 meters doesn't mean that you don't give it a penalty, right? In this case, a penalty would have been completely disproportionate for it.
Yeah.
Tuchel should know better. If he wants to go and make it about himself and blame the referee, then get angry about, I thought the Kane should have been sent off.
Yeah.
You want to go there,
me too,
right?
100%.
That
where'd you stand on the Saka penalty?
Oh, but I think Saka either loses control, doesn't realize where he is, and looks for the contact. I thought that was a correct call. The one argument, there was one incident where Gabriel and Kane were wrestling in the box where I thought Gabriel got a little too handsy.
Yeah, he does that a lot.
But then also Kane's very good at drawing penalties, so
yeah.
You know, six.
Great game overall anyway.
Yeah, look, it was really entertaining. Not as entertaining as what we saw in the Bernabeu at the Parc des Princes. It's my luck for choosing this one. Atletico Madrid beat Borussia Dortmund 2-1 in the other quarterfinal first leg. Jules, we saw Dortmund defending horribly.
Yep.
Not a surprise.
Nope.
But we also saw Atleti nearly self-destructing at home, which is much more of a surprise. Julian Brandt with that last-ditch woodwork.
Yeah, why is Julian Brandt not starting that game is beyond me. I mean, Edin Terzic maybe doesn't want to be the manager anymore next season if he keeps making those mistakes, because this is not the plan. Felix Nemcha starts and
I don't need to see that guy ever again.
It's one of the worst
for Dortmund.
One of the worst. We talked about Asensio and how bad Asensio was in the first half. Our friend Felix, well, that was even worse. It was embarrassing at times. When Brand came on, much better. His header right at the end, hit the woodwork. He was involved, obviously, on the Alea goal as well. Much better from Dortmund in the second half when Atletico just dropped deeper.
No, and
stopped playing.
I have the issue so much with the dropping deeper. That's how you play. You hit them on the counter. But they had chances, the Correa chance especially, yeah. And others.
Great, so
they could have put this kid.
Yeah, they should have. They should have, to be fair. Liverpool face Atalanta in the Europa League on Thursday night in a few hours, Gab. But there will be no flags in the cup as the red supporters are angry over ticket prices.
So if you're in the US, or listening to us from there or other parts of the world, and you're used to paying a certain amount to see football, even MLS,
yeah.
you might laugh at this, but this is serious. This is serious, and Liverpool fans locally who go to Anfield take this very seriously because of the club's roots and the meaning to them. It's a 2% price increase, right? Liverpool saying, oh, look, it's going to be about £1 a game, right?
Yeah.
However, they're very angry about this.
For the principle, I guess, right?
It's a principle. The club obviously have record revenues. Two of the bigger groups in the Cop, the Spine Cop 1906 and the Spirit of Shankly, have decided that tonight against Atalanta, there will be no flags. There will be fans there.
Yeah.
Klopp was asked about it. Obviously, Klopp is in a difficult position.
Of course.
They're running a business, but also, you know, I think he understands the fans' position. He said, well, better that there be fans and no flags than just have flags there and no fans, which actually happened before. I don't know if you remember this, about 8 years ago.
Yeah.
I think they'll come to a resolution, but it kind of goes to show that, you know, yeah, I don't. This ties in what we're going to talk about later about the independent regulator and stuff. is this a business where you maximize profits, or is it something more that has a meaning in the community? Last 5 years, Premier League clubs, the Premier League as a whole, made losses each of the past 5 years after making profits in the 5 years before that. This is food for thought for all these owners who come in. Football director, not director of football, but football director. True. John Murtagh is leaving Manchester United. Jules with Ratcliffe and Brailsford coming in, and Omar Berada. Most definitely. Not a surprise.
Not a surprise. We will miss him. Not really. Not really sure exactly what he did or if he did it well even.
But he signed players on behalf of who the manager wanted.
Yeah. Okay. Well, in that case, he didn't do a great job. John Murtagh, there's a reason why Fletcher, for example, is staying and not Murtagh. It's a fresh start. They were always going to bring a new sporting director, director of football, football director, whatever way you want to put it. And it would be Dan Ashworth. And then I don't think they would have kept John Murtagh within the club anyway. Fletcher, they're going to find another job. But for Murtagh, I'm sure he will find another job somewhere in football.
Yeah, he's been around the block. Yeah,
exactly. Premier League Chief Executive Richard Masters wrote a piece in the Times, Gab, warning against the dangers of that independent regulatory that you mentioned.
Yeah, this is what we talked about. The idea is having a committee that would be independent but would have government oversight that could regulate certain financial things and then impose certain standards on clubs. This is something that's supported by both left and right in England, both the opposition and the government. Obviously, no businessman likes regulation. I think generally that, certainly at the top end, he said that the Premier League is an industry that leads the world, which it frankly is. He's right. He says there's a risk of, quote, wounding the goose that provides English football's golden egg, meaning the Premier League helps fund the whole pyramid below them. Clubs like Reading, who our producer Freddie supports, I'm sure he favors an independent regulator for obvious reasons. It's a tough balancing act. Ultimately, I think this is a philosophical question as much as anything else. And who does the game belong to, the owners or to the fans? Yeah. The court in Barcelona has rejected a request by the victim to cancel Dani Alves' bail in the rape case, which he's appealing after having been sentenced to 4.5 years in prison. Jules, make sense?
I thought it was disgusting. I remember we talked about it at the time when he paid or somebody paid for him the 1 million euros bail amount, so he was able to be freed during the appeal. I don't understand. He was convicted. Even if he decided to appeal, he should have stayed in jail for me.
Well, but you got to go by what the law says. Yeah. The law says you have a right to do this, and that you're innocent until the final degree of, you know, until it's, you've exhausted.
I understand. I just don't like it. Everton have been deducted a further 2 points for violating Premier League PSR. God, they're appealing. Of course they are.
Of course they're appealing, and supposedly in these new PSR rules, we're going to get the judgment before the end of the season. Obviously, they were docked 6 points before. That was under the old rules, which had a longer process. This is under the new rules, supposed to be provide real-time answers. It sucks for them, but at some point, once you move to the real-time system, there will be some overlap between the 3 years before and the 3 years now. I think Everton have more serious issues in terms of their ownership situation. But this is a table, Jules. You can tell me who's going down. Palace are in 30 points, Brentford 29, Everton 27, Forest 25, as well as Luton also on 25, Burnley 19, Sheffield United on 16, and Everton and Forest have a game in hand.
The ones who are the bottom three that I've said.
Luton. Come on, the Hatters.
I just don't think they will do it.
I mean, it's so close, Jules.
It is really close. It's great because everywhere in this table we have competition.
I'd be very concerned about clubs that have been trending the wrong way, like Brentford, for example. It's easy to forget how we all assumed Luton were dead and buried, and now they're far from it. In very, very difficult conditions, they're right up there. I don't know. I agree with you on Sheffield United. That's all I'm going to say right now. I'm still holding out hope for Vinny and Burnley. Jules, Jose Mourinho has been linked to return to Benfica by the paper Correio da Manhã. This is kind of odd because Roger Schmidt has recently extended his deal through 2026. Yeah. And by the way, they knew Mourinho's old. They might not have known Mourinho was going to get sacked, but they knew his deal was going to end in 2024. I'm not.
Yeah, really, you know, this, I can tell, you know, I don't know. I mean, Roger Schmidt is having not a very good season. Domestically, Sporting are going to win
4 points back.
Yeah.
Well, you say they're going to win the league. It's not 4 points, not 50 points, but yeah.
Benfica have played one game more than Sporting, though. So potentially 7 points. I don't think they can come back. That defeat in the derby the other day at the last minute, I think, made a big difference. In Europe, they're still there in the Europa League. They play Marseille tonight in a few hours in Lisbon. We will see. I mean, Jose with the full Jose.
Give us the quote, Jules. Quote, give us. I put it right there for you to read.
Benfica are my past. Can they be my future? Question mark. Only God knows. But the Estadio de la Luz is only 20 minutes from my house. Of course it is, Jose. I feel empty when I'm not coaching. I mean, it's very much like, as you said, like, come and get me, please. Is that what you say in English?
Sounds like it. He did say that the Sporting Stadium, the Jose Alvalade, is also 20 minutes from his house.
I know. Suggests
to me maybe he lives in central Lisbon. Not in Setúbal.
So, And Ruben Amorim is going to leave. Maybe.
And Ruben Amorim is going to leave. So I wonder if it's like a double deception. Like, ooh, I'll cozy up to Benfica, but actually, I want the Sporting job.
I want the job. Maybe. 777 Partners, the Miami outfit who are looking to buy Everton. Gabby have asked for an extension to close the deal. You have the money or you don't have the money? What is a month going to do?
All right. So this is, I'm trying to piece this together. So obviously these are the people who already own either outright or they own big chunks of Hertha Berlin, of Genoa, of, was it Standard Liège, I think?
Yeah, Red Star.
Red Star Paris. Vasco da Gama, I think, as well. So basically, under the terms of their negotiation, the Premier League is evaluating whether essentially they're fit and proper to own a club. Premier League said, well, wait a minute, you guys borrowed $158 million. You better replay this by Monday or otherwise we're going to have a problem here. This is this coming Monday.
Yeah.
So they asked for an extension to repay this loan.
Okay.
This isn't Everton, by the way. These are the people who want to buy Everton, right? So they borrowed the money. What they did with the money is they borrowed the money and then they loaned it to Everton. They've loaned Everton about $180 million since September. So they're saying, my first question is, so that 180 that you gave in September, most of it is this $158 million that you borrowed from MSP and whatever. So they're saying, well, look, we're going to fund the running costs until the end of the season while you guys, Premier League, make the decision. We figure it's going to cost us about $60 million between now and the end of the season to fund Everton, which, again, seems kind of odd to me because there's 3 months left in the season,
right? Yeah, I was going to say, seven games.
So that's $20 million a month, give or take, right? That would suggest that Everton's wage bill is about $240 million and that there's no money coming in whatsoever week after week. Who knows these numbers? Strange. There's just too many freaking questions here. Honestly, how about you borrow the money, get your financing in place first, and then you make the bid? And then you don't go and borrow money left, right, and center from people who are going to want their loans repaid. It's not a good look.
No, it's not.
Now, you'll like this one.
Yeah.
Since you're old school. Like, Paul Scholes, who, dope, did I ever mention Mark Ogden played with him when they were in the... Yeah, he's only about it every other week. Paul Scholes took to Instagram to criticize Kaby Mainoo and Alejandro Garnacho, posting a picture of them wearing hoods in training. He says, you can't train properly with a hood. Jules, do you agree?
To be fair, I've never trained with a hood. They had the beanie underneath. Is that your beanie that you say? Maybe they didn't want the beanie to be wet with the rain. I don't know. They put the hood on. I don't know. We didn't see the whole training.
Well, that's what I mean. You found a picture of training. You weren't at training. You find a picture. Maybe they were training without the hood.
Yeah,
and then they put the jackets on because guess what? They live in Manchester like you.
Yeah.
And it was rainy and cold and horrendous.
Yeah. And I'm not sure the hood prevent you from playing at your highest level because, you know, it says standards begin on the training pitch. Well, what kind of standard? Dress code, dress sense standards. So you are putting your socks on top of your tracksuit bottom? Are you allowed tracksuit bottom to train? Are you not? You remember the snood? There was a bit of controversy with the snood at the time in the summer, in the winter when you cover your neck. I mean, come on.
I hope in his next Instagram post,
he
talks to us about, he tells us his views on the footballers who cut holes in their socks.
Oh, yeah.
And in particular, Dako Dodo. And I hope he goes all granular because there's some players who, you know, I understand why they do it, but they just kind of cut a series of holes down down kind of the back of their socks, right?
Yeah.
I watched Nani Madueke up close. Just check this out. It looks like Swiss cheese. He cuts them. There's no pattern to it. It seems different every time. So I'm like, are you making a fashion statement, Nani?
Maybe.
What does Paul Scholes feel about it? I feel like I really need to know.
Question. Very good question. Let's hope he answers. According Holland has ordered the football agency SEG to pay Inter defender Stefan de Vrij €5 million in compensation gap, finding that they were not transparent when they negotiated his move as a free agent to Inter Milan.
Yeah, so I feel like we've mentioned SEG a lot because they were founded by that guy Cruz, who's now the who's supposed to be the chief executive at Ajax, but now he's being investigated for essentially for kind of doing some pump and dump insider trading, buying shares in the club, when he knew he was going to be appointed. Now, what SEG did, again, if you're listening to us and you're not familiar with how the transfer market works, you're going to say, like, this is crazy. How is this even legal? What SEG did was Stefan de Vrij was a free agent leaving Lazio, and they got paid. They represented de Vrij, and they also represented Inter, who was the club that he was signing for. And Inter, they got Inter to pay them €9.5 million in commission, as well as a sell-on fee, whether in case they sell de Vrij later, which they won't. So your obvious thing is, wait a minute, this is a conflict of interest, right? Because if you want the €9.5 million commission, then you want to get the deal with de Vrij done, and you're not going to say, oh, hey, de Vrij wants X amount of money. You're going to talk de Vrij down, but you're also supposed to be representing de Vrij.
Yeah.
Right? The reality is this kind of stuff happens all the time in football. Yeah. Because the reality is most players do not pay their agents. They just don't do it.
Yeah.
The clubs pay their agents, and there's an enormous conflict of interest there. And I think in this case, the court found that they weren't honest with de Vrij about it, or they weren't transparent. I think they are going to appeal this again.
Yeah.
But this is the way football's working at the moment, and this is why FIFA have taken steps, and a lot of agents hate this for the simple reason that they don't want to go after their clients to pay them, because footballers think it's okay. Oh, I don't need to pay. The club will pay.
Yeah.
Which, I don't know, so stupid. Ultras at Angers issued a statement about sexual assault in their stadium, Jules. This comes less than a month after the club's owner was jailed for sexually assaulting six female employees. This is entirely unclear to me.
Yeah.
The crappy translation I read, whether they're talking about their former owner or their current owner still, right? Going to be going to prison, or they're talking about somebody else?
No, so it's an incident that happened on Saturday.
What, did their former owner come back to visit?
No, not with him. Not with Saïd Chaban, who, like you said, has appealed his punishment, his the court, what the court said in that particular sexual assault
case.
Sorry, thank you. So let's see where that goes. He was also in court the other day for dealing with agents and paying commissions and all of that with people who didn't have the agent license. So it's not one thing. This is on Saturday in the league game. Some of the ultras and one especially saw a woman being sexually assaulted, in the stand during the game, which he
in a different stand from the one that they were in, or
no, in that stand. So he stopped the assault happening. They went and named the assaulter, to the club, hoping that it will be banned and they will take it to the police and everything. So the right reaction from the ultras, especially the one that saw it and intervened, well done. And again, I mean, this is not the first. We've had a few stories like that in Ligue 1, Ligue 2 this season.
But I mean, sexual assault in the stands during a football match, when you've got police, security, and stewards,
CCTV cameras, everything.
And everybody has mobile phones. Yeah. I haven't seen any videos of this.
No, me neither.
Seems kind of odd to me.
Yeah, yeah, but they were pretty adamant, hence the statement and everything. Right. So,
but you understand why I wondered if Chabani had come back.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's not Chaban this time. Not this time. Chelsea have spent £80 million, Gab, on a building and land next door to Stamford Bridge to their stadium. Does this mean that they will be redeveloping that stadium rather than moving anywhere else?
So, I mean, it's a complex answer here, actually, Jules.
Okay.
Basically, it's called the Sir Oswald Stall Mansions. That's actually what it's called.
But okay.
We're here in England, and people have to have silly names.
Yeah.
I don't know who Oswald Stahl was. I'm sure he was an important, kind person. And this is a place, this is basically a building for, almost like an old age home for veterans, former soldiers.
Yeah.
So they bought it for $80 million. It's right next door to the ground. This enables them to build a much bigger footprint for Stamford Bridge. Don't worry, they're not going to chuck the veterans out on the streets as part of the agreement. No. Like, they're going to rehouse all
That's
of them.
That's good of them.
It's going to wait until, it's not going to happen until the end of 2025. They couldn't realistically move anywhere either because they have this weird agreement unusual agreement that I think protects Chelsea fans, dating back to when the club nearly went bust before, where the freehold of Stamford Bridge is owned by this organization called Chelsea Pitch Owners.
Yeah.
And they have to, essentially, if you wanted to move Chelsea elsewhere, you would have to rename it something else. Maybe, I don't know, Clear Lake Superstars or something.
Right.
You can't keep the same name unless they agree on it. If Chelsea essentially move away from Stamford Bridge. So this suggests to me that they've decided they're going to redevelop the land. It is a very, very tight fit. I don't know if you can build a new stadium next door to Stamford. I don't think there's enough land for you to build next door
to
Stamford
Liverpool
Bridge.
And just either go higher or maybe just extend the...
They have planning permission for that, which Roman Abramovich negotiated, although I think that's going to expire at some point. It's a tough one. I mean, they're obsessed with... They want more match day. They have a stadium that holds 42,000, and what they consider their peer clubs, Liverpool, United, Arsenal, Spurs, they all have much bigger grants. And of course, United might be getting a brand spanking new one. Yeah. So this is necessary. Marseille face Benfica in the Europa League in a few hours. But Jules, OM supporters planning to travel to the game got some bad news.
Yeah, that's an incredible story, I think. So the first leg is tonight, as we said, Thursday night in Lisbon. Most of the 2,500 Marseille fans with tickets are already there with their tickets, except that on Tuesday night, so 2 days before the game, Benfica and the Portuguese police announced that those tickets would not be valid on the night of the game. They didn't want any Marseille fans to be in the stadium, to travel, to attend the game, which you can imagine on Tuesday night, there was already a lot of Marseille fans in town. And this is a response because prior to the second leg on Tuesday as well, on Monday I think it was, the police in Marseille and the préfet, so like the head of security for the area, announced that Benfica fans some of them were quite dangerous, looking for fights and everything, so they would ban every Benfica fan to come to the ground. So Benfica as a club, in response to that, said, oh, you're banning our fans to come in 10 days, we're going to ban your fans to come in 2 days. And that's what they've done. Marseille are fuming. They are threatening not to travel, so not have their Pablo Longoria, the president. So no delegation to travel. The players will obviously play, but no have any official delegations. You know where usually clubs bring all their
I got to say, I have to laugh when clubs do this because it's kind of like, who cares? All right.
Although, then what do you say, though?
Pablo Longoria's not there. All right.
Yeah, but what do you do? You know, for you, it's bad. Most of your fans are already in town.
No. I we've had these situations before. We had it with Lazio and Feyenoord and whatnot. I think you have to defer to the police. Frankly, this idea that super dangerous Benfica fans going to Marseille. Honestly, if you go to Marseille and you decide to pick a fight with the local ultras, you're either a cage fighter or you're a moron, right? So I don't generally... I thought that was a bit over the top to begin with.
Yeah, it was.
But to not give the supporters notice, to just cancel tickets.
I know.
And the other thing is, and I'm sorry, I'm not the Lisbon security police chief, but surely you would rather want, if there are 2,500 Marseille fans there, and you really think these people could be violent and pick fights, surely you would want them all at the Estadio da Luz, which is a modern stadium where you can monitor them and police them, rather than saying, oh, guys, sorry, you can't go to the game. Okay, fine. We'll just run around and wreak havoc elsewhere. Yeah. If this is really your fear.
That's a really good point. Gab, six men have been arrested following the murder of Kaiser Chiefs defender Luc Fleurs in an attempted carjacking in a suburb of Joburg.
Yeah, this is a horrible story. And the reason we're mentioning this is that real life, sadly, intrudes on football all the time. And our thoughts go out to him and his loved ones. Obviously, there's a security situation in South Africa, but this could have happened. This could have happened anywhere. Bad things happen. You're glad that the police were able to arrest these six people. Apparently, the story is reportedly that they're part of a wider carjacking ring.
Okay.
Hopefully, can bring the whole thing down. And our thoughts go out to his family and loved ones. Karim Benzema opened the scoring for Al Ittihad, who beat Al Wehda in the semi-final of the Saudi Super Cup. Yes, that's a thing.
Yeah.
Jules, it's his first goal since mid-December. Unless you want to count the own goal that he scored against...
No, that's okay. We don't count that.
Champions League. I'm sure he wouldn't want you to.
No.
Now, the only reason we're talking about this, frankly, is as an excuse for you to do your catchphrase.
Karim the Dream. Here we go.
There we go.
So long to come. Him and Gallardo not really getting on, but he's
I'm so pleased for him after that horrible time he had when he was stuck in the Maldives.
Super happy to score. I'm not listening to your slander. Super happy to score. Super happy for him. He's back. Alexander Nübel will reportedly get an extension on his Bayern Munich deal and will remain on loan at Stuttgart next season as well. Does that make sense to you?
Honestly, no. I don't understand why you're deciding this now when you don't know who your next manager is. What is there? I mean, yeah, you can give him the five-year extension, reportedly. But why decide now that he's going to stay on Stuttgart, is on loan at Stuttgart for the rest of the season? It's also that weird German thing where they're actually going head-to-head with Stuttgart, by the way, yeah, for second place in the league. But hey, that seems to be normal there. Neuer turns 39 next season, and he's had some serious injuries.
Yeah.
I'm assuming they don't think the guy they brought in, the Daniel Peretz, is any good, because when Neuer's been out, it's been Uncle Sven, right, Ulreich?
Again at the weekend, yeah.
Who we know that they don't want starting for them next season. So why would you make this decision now?
I know.
Maybe you get a manager in who's like, hey, I don't like Manuel Neuer. Or maybe he says, oh, look, maybe Manuel Neuer gets injured again. It just seems really odd. It seems the whole thing just doesn't seem well thought out.
I agree. Max Eberl for decision, really.
The United States women's national team beat Canada on penalties to win the She Believes Cup. Five in a row for them.
Yeah, it's a bit of a pattern now, Gab, and it's not bad before the Olympics as well. This international break in women's football in Europe, we've got the Euro 2025 qualifiers, for example. In the US, there was the She Believes Cup, which is a friendly tournament. But
invitational, I believe.
Yeah, exactly. But that means a lot, and it's probably the last chance they had to play something before the Olympics, before getting together before the Olympics. So well done to the US trying to turn around that form after the disappointment of the Women's World Cup, of course, in Australia. So at least this is good, even if it's not completely convincing. I find it's a win and it's important. You know, it's another kind of a trophy. Francesco Totti will captain Italy in the Kings League World Cup to be held in Mexico in Gab. Gab, are you exciting? He's 47, but he's still Totti, right? He's still fit.
Held in Mexico in May, not in Gab, Jules.
Sorry.
Starts in May, ends June 9th. So for those who don't know, the Kings League, and I invite you all to go to YouTube and watch it, or Twitch, actually, I guess is where it is. It's a combination, I don't know if it's six aside, I think.
Seven aside.
Yeah. It's a seven-a-side league, but there's all these gimmicks that go with it. Like the president can come on and take a penalty. They have weird rules.
Yeah.
There's people kind of live streaming and talking over it the whole time. There's a certain demographic that absolutely loves this. If you're even old school about about like five-a-side football,
yeah,
or stuff like that, you probably won't like this. But I will say this about Totti is he's 47, but he's been playing sort of six-a-side, five-a-side, seven-a-side, since he retired.
Yeah.
And he's won a lot of tournaments. It's kind of like a big thing in Rome. I like it suits him. He doesn't have to run. He didn't run much in the last 20 years of his career.
Yeah.
Since he moved from the wing inside. He's already won a World Cup, as you know.
Yeah.
So this would be pretty cool. I'm actually wondering, maybe, hey, Gerard, I know.
Yeah, Gerard Piqué is the mastermind behind
this, right?
Yeah.
And Gerard, I know, I'm sorry, we had to do our duty and report on the bank accounts in Andorra and the deal you did, but how about you invite Jules, me, and producer Freddie out to Mexico?
Great idea to cover it.
Yeah, it'll be. It comes. We could do the first bit before the Champions League final,
yeah,
or we could come out after the Champions League final, before the Euros?
Yeah.
Neymar, that sounds pretty good.
Neymar is the Brazil captain. Not that he will play, but he's still the Brazil captain. And you know,
wait, manager. Can't even take penalties or anything?
Oh, maybe he can with all those crazy rules.
Just a thought, Jared.
Yeah,
just
exactly.
Think about it. Sonia Bonpastor, who I believe is the coach of Lyon.
That's right.
Tom Hamilton reporting for us, and others reporting for us, that she will be the new coach of Chelsea to replace Emma Hayes, who herself will, of course, become coach of the U.S. Women's National
Team. Gab. Yeah, we've reported it as well 2 weeks ago. That is pretty done and close, and we were the only one at the time. She was the top of the shortlist to replace Emma Hayes. She's done great things with Lyon. She won the Champions League. She won the league. This season, she's still very much in the competition as well, in the Champions League, to go far with Lyon, and they will play PSG in the semi-final and then potentially meet Chelsea in the final, which would be quite incredible.
It's a big loss for John Textor, who we haven't mentioned yet in the show, but I was wondering, how can we shoehorn him in? This is he must be really upset.
Well, yeah, he must be. And Jean-Michel Aulas as well. And also, I think Aulas wanted her to be the next France head coach.
John Textor is the big boss, Aulas. Aulas is gone.
But still,
he's just a Lyon fan.
Yeah, but now he's the kind of the head of women's football in the French Federation. So he wanted her for the French head coach job after Hervé Renard leaves after the Olympics. So he was a bit upset about that. I think she's great. I think she will be a perfect fit for Chelsea. It won't be easy to come after Emma Hayes, and I think that will come with a lot of pressure and a lot of expectations, all of that. But I think she's ready. Even if she hasn't been that long a manager, she was a great player before. She speaks the language. I'm just looking forward to it, really.
Arguably Portugal's greatest ever women's player?
No, she played for France, but she's from Portuguese descent. Oh. So she, she was born in Portugal, came to France really young, and then played all her career in France and for France.
So she's like the goalkeeper Lopez.
Exactly, yeah.
There you go.
I mean, big diaspora, of course, of, you know, Portuguese background in France. We talked already a bit about the PSG Barcelona game, Gab. But before that, on Movistar, the channel in Spain that broadcast the Champions League this season, Germán Burgos, the former Atletico Madrid goalkeeping coach, had some horrible words and comments on Lamine Yamal.
Yeah, this is taken so seriously by Paris Saint-Germain and Barcelona that afterwards, even though Movistar are the rights holders, they said, no, we're not going. And so as a result, they have the right to do those little, they call them flash interviews, where if you're the rights holder, you get to talk to a player or a coach.
Straight after the game.
Exclusively, right? Straight after the game. They said, no, we're not going to talk to them. And it's because Germán Burgos, and this all happened in real time, so I guess he must have been talking
pre-game,
before the game.
He
said about Lamine Yamal, well, and he's talking over video of Lamine Yamal, like, juggling the ball. He said, well, something, and I am paraphrasing here, but it was something along the lines of, if he doesn't make it at Barcelona, you know, he can end up at a traffic light because, in, I guess, in some parts of Spain, there's kids at traffic lights who juggle balls, or I don't know if you've seen people, like, sometimes, like, they'll juggle knives or stuff like that for change. Which is pretty offensive.
Very offensive.
Germán Burgos apologized for it after the game, and people can speculate, would he have apologized it if Paris Saint-Germain and Barcelona had pretended not to hear it and not made a big deal out of it? You can be cynical. I think this is a message that we need to be careful and mindful about the way we talk. And there's many different ways that you could have made the same point that, oh, his juggling's great, but that's not what's going to make him a great player, if that's what you want to say. Yeah. Or you could have said, oh, well, you know, if he doesn't make it at Barcelona, he's going to have to find another job, or he can go to the circus. I don't know, right?
They'll
become a performance artist, but there are certain ways. Words have meaning. 100%. Words are loaded.
Yeah.
Lionel Messi won't be adding to the CONCACAF Champions Cup to his various UEFA Champions League titles. Inter Miami were beaten 3-1. By Monterrey, vamos rayados, in the quarterfinal second leg.
They were well beaten in the first leg as well without him, and they were well beaten with him and with Luis Suarez up front as well in the second leg. They were 3-0 down. There was a horrendous mistake by the goalkeeper as well, but really I think they were just two different levels.
Jordi Alba getting sent off as well.
Yeah, so it's not a good night at all for him. Monterrey, we're going to face, I think, Columbus Crew.
By yes.
It will be Tigres on penalty.
So we don't get the big Monterrey derby.
No, that's true. Gignac missing his pen, by the way, and the fans not being happy with him. And for Inter Miami, that's one competition already.
I feel Gignac has been there for 10 years
yeah.
now.
Like, yeah, how almost, old is he? He's 38 now.
Jesus.
I know. And he's still, I think, obviously an idol and an icon, but...
He's like a very ugly version of... He's a very ugly, one-dimensional version relative to Olivier Giroud, right? Would that be fair?
I won't go there, as I know them both. Obviously.
Okay, but who's more handsome, yeah, Giroud or Gignac?
But he's more handsome than 99% of the players, too, so, you know.
But he's... Okay, whatever.
Including Gignac. From one to the other, Gab, Cristiano Ronaldo was sent off for Al Nassr, who were defeated by Al Hilal in the semi-final of the Saudi Super Cup.
Yeah, he was pretty incensed. He was very angry about having a goal disallowed.
Yeah.
That got himself booked. And then they're like tussling for the ball by the sideline. There's 5 minutes to go. I think they're still very much in the game at that mm-hmm. point. But he just kind of loses it. He throws an elbow. And then he kind of throws another sort of... half elbow on this guy Abulahi, with whom I think he has previous, if I recall correctly. Cristiano's gets fouled, he gets wound up, and he takes most of it and has done for most of his career. But sometimes, yeah. because he's human in that sense, sometimes he loses it. And then after he went off, he also it looked like he was going to... I mean, he was far away from the referee.
Yeah.
But he made a very aggressive gesture with his fist.
Again, it's not the first time this season. How many incidents like that we talked about?
It's not a good look. But the man's super competitive. And he cares. Even this, we can joke about, the Saudi Super Cup. But dude wants to win, man.
Yeah, fair enough.
Jules, this brings us to an end. But we got to come back on Monday.
Oh, yeah.
Because we have quite the title race on our hands in the Premier League. So until then, love the game, love your neighbor, love yourself.